who wanted to bury their father, even if the two were not close. Yet when he had been a little boy, the pair had experienced many wonderful times together, the stuff of Hallmark movies and greeting cards. Then, as the years crept by, Nash had the misfortune of becoming someone that his tough as nails, take no prisoners Vietnam veteran father had been unable to respect, or apparently even like. After that, his father, Tiberius, universally referred to as Ty, had led his life and Nash his, and the two never saw one another for the most part. Although they resided in the same town, his father in an ordinary cluster of old homes, Nash behind a security gate that kept out all others, including probably those who lived in the ordinary cluster of old homes. Nash worked on his tie while he appraised himself in the mirror. 40 years old, a stitch over 6'3", and lanky but too thin with a bony, undeveloped chest, and lackluster shoulders and stick arms and legs. He'd never focused on muscling up. Unless you were an athlete, soldier, cop, or bouncer, what was the point? His brown hair was still thick and wavy, although graying slightly at the temples. He and his wife, Judith, and their 19-year-old daughter, Maggie, lived in a sprawling 9,000-square-foot, two-story, stone and stucco house with a finely appointed finished lower level and a total of 5 bedrooms and 7 bathrooms for just the trio of them. There was also a 3-car side-load garage with his big burgundy Range Rover, Judith's silver Mercedes-Benz S-Class sedan, and Maggie's forest-green BMW convertible occupying the bays. The property was completed by a large landscaped backyard anchored by an in-ground pool with iridescent tiles. Maggie had been a college pregnancy, compelling Walter and Judith to hasten down to the local courthouse to say their wedding vows with a judge they did not know, and in the absence of both their families. A true honeymoon had never followed. They'd purchased a condo instead. It made far more sense, Nash had decided. For him, honeymoons were simply very expensive photo album fillers. He had later sold the condo and paid off both their college loans with the profits. Nash was a senior executive VP at Sybaritic Investments. He had risen to that title after years of 100-hour weeks and brief or no vacations, and living at 35,000 feet as he went from one state or country to the next, crunching numbers, analyzing business opportunities, negotiating terms, and putting together complicated deals that required legions of lawyers and mounds of paper, and a cool hand while under enormous pressure. All of his hard work and sacrifice had paid off. He now earned a 7-figure salary plus substantial bonuses. Although he adored them both, Nash was not overly close to his wife or daughter. It was simply not in his nature to be particularly intimate with anyone. They did not seem put off by his aloofness. Indeed, his wife and daughter welcomed him on those occasions when he did join in. The truth was, he had never made friends easily. An introvert, he was proficient and talented with numbers and moving money from here to there and assembling business prospects together in ways that were visionary and value-enhancing. He could articulate all sorts of substantive and meaningful things having to do with such tasks and also be a motivating and fair leader with his team. However, in truth, he preferred to be alone. He had had one friend, though, one that he missed terribly to this day. He was a labradoodle named Charlie. They'd gotten him from a breeder when Maggie was 4. A year ago, as age and illness had robbed the senior dog of any quality of life, they'd had to put Charlie down. Nash had become so disoriented and breathless during the procedure that he had thought he was having either a panic attack or a heart attack. Did that make me pathetic? Shedding tears for a dog when I didn't come close to that level of grief for my father's passing? Yes, it probably did.